Brooke, and I'm a grateful member of Al-Anon.
Hi, Brooke.
And I want to thank the committee for inviting me, and I have been up here. I was trying to think how long ago it was, but I remember being in this room, so I really appreciate the invite to come back again. And I want to thank Sarah and Gloria, and nice to see friendly faces at the Tom and Sue. So I appreciate being here. I like what the big book says about when we give our stories, we are trying to help establish how we formed relationship with the God of our understanding. And I'm going to tell you a little bit what I was like, what happened, and what I'm like today. I was not raised in a home where there was active drinking. I was raised with a lot of relatives that had drinking issues, and all I remember from a child was thinking that my house was a lot quieter. We lived right next door. We're from West Virginia, as my husband says, a bunch of hillbillies back there in West Virginia. But I lived right next door to my cousins, and my cousin Eddie was, I would guess, an alcoholic from a child's perspective. That's what I heard people say about him, and he did have a lot of drinks, and I could hear the difference. In our house, there would be quiet, but when I was in their house, there was always a lot of yelling and screaming, and I was never a place where I was comfortable being. But I was not raised in my family. My mom and dad did not drink. I can only think of a few times in my whole life growing up that I saw my mom or dad ever have a drink, so it was not a problem. Didn't come to know for many years that my dad was raised by a very abusive, drunken man that left him when he was 12 years old. My dad, until I was well, had children. Did I ever hear my dad even speak about his father? He just hated him, and he said he was a drunk, and he kept a house of ill repute. And you know, on my mother's side, she comes from a Baptist minister side, so we have real extremes in our growing up time. But I met the person who was to qualify me. Well, probably my home life qualified me some, but the one that really got me to come to the Al-Anon program was my husband. And I met him when I was 15 years old. I was a sophomore in high school. He was a senior in high school, and we met at a sock hop, and it was love at first sight. I thought I was married. I thought I was had met the man of my dreams. It ended up being the man of my nightmares, you know, as later on. But at 15, what do you know? I was married at 18, and I based getting married because he was cute and he was funny. And I know today those are not necessarily good qualities necessarily to look for when you're looking for a mate. But he still makes me laugh today, which is good. But we did meet, and I knew at that time that there was drinking in his home because his dad was a heavy drinker, and I remember when we'd go out on dates, he'd come over sometime, he'd have a black eye, or he'd have something going on, and he had had a fight with his dad, and so I knew there was drinking going on there, and I knew he drank, but when he was with me, it seemed very controlled. I mean, you know, when you're 17, 18, 19, everybody experiments a little bit, and so I didn't think too much of it at the time, but we did get married when I was only 18 years old. He was 21. He just came back from the Vietnam, and his drinking had escalated by that time. And what I know about how his drinking affected me is that the more he began to drink, the more afraid I became, because his drinking became a financial burden. We started drinking a lot early on, and you know, the bills were starting to pile up, and we were spending a lot of money on alcohol. And I know the more that he started to drink, the more I was afraid of life in general. I was afraid of what he was going to do, or where he was going to go, or if he was going to come home. And I was just afraid. At 18, 19, 20 years old, I had not enough life experience to know things could be any different. Like, God loved him. And so we kind of started our dance with alcohol from the time he got home from the service. And like I said, as his drinking became more escalated, I became more controlling, more fearful, and then I became angry. And things kind of progressed. And when we got to be about married about 7 years, we had by that time had three children. We had a daughter, and then we have a set of twins after that. And I was working in an treatment center at the time, and I know God does for us what we cannot do for ourselves. So I was introduced to Alcoholics Anonymous and Al-Anon back in 1972 when I was working in as a medical secretary in a treatment center. And I was working the 3-11 shift, and Jeff was supposed to pick up our three children, and I got a call like 9 o'clock that night saying that he had never come. He was supposed to pick them up at 5 o'clock, that he hadn't shown up, didn't know where he was, hadn't heard from him or anything. And so I started calling the hospitals. I worked in one of the hospitals. I called a couple of the hospitals. I called my friends, called my mother-in-law to see if she had seen him, and nobody had seen him. And I had to leave work, go home, go to her house, get her children, take them home. And she called me about the time I was walking in the door, and she said, "He's on his way home." And I was livid. I was just so angry that he would be here so irresponsible as to not pick up our children. And I was just really angry. And this is not the first time that he hadn't done these things. This is not the first time he hadn't been where he said he was going to be. But this was kind of like one of the lines that he crossed. And I just remember when he came in the house that night, I just said, "If you think I'm going to live the way your mother's lived for the last 20 years, you're crazy. I'm not going to live like this. I'm not going to subject myself to what I've watched your mother." My mother-in-law and my father-in-law was a very unfaithful man in his marriage, and I didn't want to live that life. But what I found out that night was that that's exactly where my husband had been. Due to his drinking, he had been with another woman, and I was 25 years old at the time, and we've been married 7 years, and I didn't know what to do, and I got on my knees that night, and I'd say the first real spiritual experience that I had, because I had been raised in a home that taught me about God and taught me about church. We went to church, and I believed that there was something greater than I was, but I had surely not invited that into my life to be in any kind of a personal relationship. And so, but that night I got on my knees and I just said, "God, if you want this marriage to work, if you want me to stay with this man, you're going to have to give me forgiveness, because I don't have the forgiveness in my heart to do that." And for the next 7 years, things get good. It's a long story between, but that 7 years, my husband turns his life over to God that night too, and he decides he's going to be a minister. He goes to seminary, and all of the next 7 years, he doesn't drink, but he's not in recovery. And what I know today is that alcoholism progresses whether there's alcohol being drunk or not. And I think actually we got crazier and crazier, because it's untreated. And so he quit drinking, but the ism still, he still was irresponsible. He was still self-centered, and I was still afraid, and I still tried to control things. And like I said, the more fearful I got, the more out of control things became, the more controlling that I became. And I was starting to become a person I didn't like. But we spent those six years during the seminary time, which was good. We were focused. We had God, and I thought things were going to be good. Well, we decided to, my husband graduates from seminary. We're going to go to Hawaii to help start a church. So we go to Hawaii, and my husband starts drinking almost immediately when we get to Hawaii. So he's had six or seven years of non-drinking, and then he starts drinking again. And for the next 7 years, our life really becomes chaotic. You know, again, the more he drank, the more controlling I became, the more fearful I became, the more resentful I became. And toward the end of his drinking, I was crazy and alone. I heard earlier on that there was a speaker say one time that it was the horns in his head met the holes in mine, and I think that's so true. We were just so fitted that way. But so we're in Hawaii by that time, and life has really gotten out of hand. By the time we get to this idea, get into the ruins of Al-Anon, we're in the middle of we're separated again because we're in the middle of a bankruptcy. We got a business that's going, besides starting a church, we started a business, and the business was going into bankruptcy. Our son has started to use drugs and alcohol by that time. I have a daughter who's bulimic that's going through that at that time. And then I pick up the phone one night, and there's a woman on the other end again. And I knew. I said to my husband at that time, because he had been drinking again, I said, I don't know exactly what I said, but it was either it's her or me, and he chose her. And he left, and we had been married 19 years at that time. And at 19 years, since I met him at 15, he's the only person I ever knew. And where this disease had taken me, I was so hollowed out by the time I got to the rooms of Al-Anon. I was reading something the other day that said, a lot of you here look like you're old enough to remember the Polaroid cameras. So when you take a picture in a Polaroid camera, it's just nothing. And what the rooms of Al-Anon did to me, it started to give me back a picture of my life, the picture of what life could be. I was so in despair, I was so afraid, I was so angry and resentful. The time I got here, there really was nothing left to me. I was so frozen in my emotions, I couldn't tell you. I knew nothing about me. And from the time I was 15 years old, this man had been everything to me. So all my focus all those years had been on him, what he was doing, what he was not doing, where he should be, what he should be doing. I totally lost sight of who I was. And I remember going to my first Al-Anon meeting, which was August 26, 1987, and I walked into this room a very broken person. I walked into this room, and I could not even utter my name. When we had to introduce ourselves, hi, my name is, it was a sob. I just couldn't even utter my name. And I was loved from the time I first walked into that meeting. There was a couple ladies that took me out for coffee and I cried. I cried to that whole meeting. I cried to that coffee. I was at my wit's end because he had left. And because I had everything tied up in him, and that's been my focus for all these years, I was literally so afraid that I would go to work, which I thank God every day that I had a boss that continued to pay me, because I'm sure I didn't do anything. I would come home and I would literally sit in a closet in a fetal position. I was just so afraid of being alone. I was so afraid of not doing this. And when I look back at that now, I think, why was that? I was the one who was working and bringing in the money. We were in a bankruptcy. He wasn't working. He wasn't making any money. I was the one painting the house, taking care of the kids, you know, all those things. What did I need him for? But I was so emotionally enmeshed with this and the disease that I had lost all that. I didn't know who I was. And I heard at one of my first meetings somebody say, I was sitting around waiting for my husband to come home to make me happy. And I thought that is exactly what I'd been doing for all these years. I had been sitting around waiting for somebody else to make me happy, waiting for somebody else to make my life different. I think what Al-Anon, I lived a lot of all my life prior to coming to Al-Anon. We live by slogans today in the program, which I love all the slogans. They mean a lot to me, but I lived by slogans prior to that. Like when I was growing up, I lived by the slogan, if you want something done right, do it yourself. What will people think? If you love me, you would blank. Don't ask, don't tell. Those are the kind of things that I brought those things into my relationship too. So it was always, what would people think if I did this? Because I knew our marriage was in trouble and I knew alcohol had been a problem well before I hit the rooms. But I kept thinking, if I leave or if I do this, what are people going to think about that? How is that going to be? And because we were active in a church at the time, I kept thinking, well, if I do this, the people will think less of God than they, you know, like I have so much power over God. But you know, I was so deluded in my thinking. And I heard early on that this is a disease of perceptions, and I think that's true. The perceptions get so screwed when you're living with active drinking and you're bouncing. I wasn't making decisions by the time I hit the rooms of Al-Anon. I was reacting. I was reacting to life. I was reacting to every little thing that happened. I couldn't make a good decision. So when I got to Al-Anon and I went to my first meetings, I was just so thankful that the meetings that I went to were meetings that really talked about getting involved in service, the steps, the traditions, and even though I didn't even know what those meant, I mean, I probably sat in the rooms for a couple months still in shock and not knowing what to do and still so afraid. of life. But people accepted me for where I was, and they took me by the hand, and they loved me. And they said, if you want to get well, you do these 12, well, you know, the 12 steps. if you want to not feel crazy and you want your life to get back on direction, you do these steps, in order, and your life's going to change. And I have to say that my life has changed. In fact, when I'm asked to speak today, I find it difficult to do that because I am so not the person that I was when I came into the program. Of course, 27 years should add a little something, I suppose. I am not that person. I am not that fearful person today. I may have some fear today, but I am not consumed in fear today, and I don't live in fear today. And I know how to handle resentments, and I know how to make amends, and I know all those things that I didn't know prior to getting to the program. But I started working the steps, and I got a sponsor. And I remember them saying, find a sponsor, find somebody that you like what they have. And there was, if those of you who have lived with alcoholism besides the alcoholic, that those of you who have lived with alcoholism, you know, there's nothing funny. By the time you get here, there's absolutely nothing funny going on in your life. Mm-hmm. And there was a little Japanese lady named Carol T, and she just had the most wonderful laugh. And she laughed, and she just had one of those laughs when she laughed. Her eyes lit up, and you couldn't help but laugh with her because she was just that way. And yet her husband was in and out of Alcoholics Anonymous for all the years that I knew her. In fact, he died sober but not involved in AA. But she had something I liked. She could laugh, and I wanted that. I wanted to have that joy back. I wanted to have to be able to laugh again, to be lighthearted, not to wear life so tight. And I was so wound up, you know, coming to that. That was something I wanted. So I asked her to be my sponsor, and she started work with me through the steps. And I had a really difficult time with step one. It took me months to take step one because step one is about being powerless, and I couldn't see that. That was very difficult for me to see that I was powerless because I was still the one doing most of the things that were keeping our life together. But and the part about accepting it. It was hard for me to think that if I accept everything that's gone on, it somehow makes it right. It somehow loses the severity of what was really going on, and it was really hard for me to do that. But what I had to know is, I think I read something in the big book that said, you know, that God is a God of reality, and I just loved that when I heard it, and I love that today, because God is a God of reality. And I could not move on with my life until I accepted life as it was, life as it had been, the past for what it was. It was just something that happened. It wasn't, I didn't have to judge it. I didn't have to, all I had to do is to accept that this is what it was. This was the reality of my life. This is where, what's happened to me, I look at that, I try to walk through that, forgive that, and to move on. And that was a big piece about it. I think the forgiveness parts came in there. That because if I had to accept that this just is what it was, the reality of this, if I could accept this, I could move on. And I could. Just once I could just see my part in this. But that's what I like about the steps, that you do them in order, and as you do the steps, doors open up to you. I was thinking of this the other day, and I thought, when I had acceptance, I had freedom for the first time. When I could accept life for what it was, I could accept people, places, and things for who they are and what they are, then there's a lot of choices. Doors of freedom and choice open up to me, that I can do something differently, that if I have a choice when I'm in the reality. When I live in what was, what I hope to be, what I wanted to be, things can't change, but I live in what's reality and what's happening today, that I can make changes, I can make choices that are in my best interest today, which I couldn't do before. And step two talks about hope to me. It opened the door of hope. I think when I came here, I was so despairing that life couldn't be different, that I had to, life happen to you instead of you making a choice and making decisions to make life different. So I saw hope, and I think that's the first, one of the best things I saw when I came into Al-Anon too, was the hope. The hope that was here, the hope that life could be changed, that I could be different, that life could be different, and that gave me hope, and hope that God was going to restore me. I always think of the word restore as a great masterpiece, when they talk about restoring a piece of art, you know, they're scraping away little bits by little bits and little bits, and pretty soon you've got a masterpiece. And I think of that about step two, about being scratched away to be restored, that I am being restored to the woman God wants me to be restored to the beauty that I once had, to the innocence that I once had before alcoholism robs you a lot of that. And I just worked to the steps. I did what my sponsor told me. I started working the steps to the best of my ability, and when I got the fourth step, I wanted to blame, prior to the program, everything that happened on my husband. You know, if he didn't drink, if we wouldn't have gotten bankrupt, or if he wouldn't have come home at night, you know, we wouldn't be in the financial shape we would be, and it wouldn't have been the infidelity. You know, all was his fault. And what the fourth step made me do is made me look at myself, made me look at every decision and every thing that happened in our life, I had a part in it. And I know that today, whenever I have something's going on, I may have a little part or I may have a big part, but I have a part in something. Somebody gave us, and I just loved it, when we first came into the program, they gave us a sticker to put on our mirror that said, "You are now looking at the problem." So true, because I know even today that if I'm in the middle of something, I am very much part of the problem, because it's either my attitude toward it or am I trying to control it. But I know that I have a part in it today. And I think by working the steps too, I have a lot of triggers that I know what sets me off today. I know as soon as I think I need to tell you what you need to do, that I am, something in my life is out of control. Something, I'm afraid about something going on. I'm afraid about losing something. I'm afraid for somebody, that I all of a sudden have to start looking outside of myself and look at you. So to me, that's a real red flag today, that as soon as I think I know best for you, that I need to be looking at me, because there's something going on with me. So I did work through the steps, and I started making, I did my fifth step, and I like to say my fourth step was a great fourth step, but it wasn't. It probably just peeled the first layer off the onion, but it got to the things that were really causing me the most pain at the time. You know, was my, the men's, and I started making my amends list, but I did my fifth step, and there's such healing in the fifth step. You know, you tell somebody, you tell God, you admit to God, yourself, and another human being the exact nature of where you're wrongs. And doing the fourth and fifth step, I was able to see the nature of my wrongs, and I was able to admit it to somebody. It was never hard for me to admit it to God, and it wasn't even hard for me to admit it to myself. But for me to have to admit it to you, that was really humbling. It was really humbling to know that somebody else knows all those things about you that you were so ashamed to tell anybody, and that the person loved you. They loved you anyway. And I think that was probably the first bit of trust that I started to feel for another human being, was that I could tell my sponsor things that I had never told anybody, and she loved me anyway and encouraged me. And working through the rest of the steps and making the amends, you know, I made the amends to those people that were on my first fourth step. I wanted to do, because I wanted to get well. I wanted my life to be different. And I hear so many people today that, you know, they struggle with getting to this step. They struggle about doing a fourth and fifth step inventory, and they're afraid to do that. And I, how can you move forward unless you do? And so I'm so thankful that this is a program that says 1, 2, 3, 4, and at the 12th step guarantees there's going to be a change. You will have a spiritual awakening if you do these steps. And I believe that to be true. I've had many spiritual awakenings over the years of being in the program. I'd like to say that, you know, once I got into Al-Anon, you know, that we've lived happily ever after. It's been hard. I mean, we've been married, if we both stay married for the next month, we'll be married 46 years. And thank you so much for that. We tried to learn. Jeff joined AA about the time I went into Al-Anon, and we did. We were able to, I shouldn't say we were able to, God was able to restore our marriage. Our marriage had had so much damage to it, with the infidelities, the lies, the deceit, and all that goes on with that, that it had to be God to restore it, because either one of us would have had the ability to do that. And we did start to work the steps in our marriage as well. And we did do a four-step on our relationship, and we laid out all those 19 years prior with all the stuff there, and it was really painful. It was really way more painful, actually, than even my individual four-step. So we did do that so that we could actually start again. So we buried that marriage, and we started afresh. Because either one of us knew how to be husbands. We didn't know how to be husbands, wives, parents. And by the time we got in the program, our oldest daughter was 16 and our twins were 13. And they were really devastated by our separation because we did separate for some months in there. And then we came into the program. And we've had a lot of healing take place over the years. But we had some rough years because by that time, just as we are getting involved in the 12-step program and our lives are starting to change and we're starting to change, our son starts to use drugs and alcohol. And for the next 20-some years, he's drank and used. And some of the hardest lessons I've had to learn, it was easier for me to let go of my husband than it has been to let go of my children. I've struggled with letting go of my children. I go to meetings, and I have a sponsor that is just about 13 years older than I am, so her kids were always just about that much ahead of mine. So she was always had some experience strength and hope to share with me. And we've needed it with our kids, especially with our son. And so for the next few years, we decided to move back to Minnesota. We've been in the program about 2 years when we decided to come back to Minnesota from Hawaii. And it took me a while to find another Al-Anon meeting that I felt comfortable with. So I don't know if all of you have heard of the Gopher State Roundup here. But we had met a couple in Hawaii that when we told them we were coming back to Minnesota, they gave us a name of Ken Y that lived in Bloomington. And they said, look him up when you get there. Well, we get back, and we can't find the car. We could remember the guy's name. We could remember he was in Bloomington, but we'd lost the car. It had his phone number on it. So we moved back here in August of 89. Gopher State Roundup was in May of 90. And we go to the Al-Anon meeting. We're at the speaker Al-Anon meeting, and we know nobody because we've been here. We've been going to meetings, but either one of us have found meetings that we really felt comfortable or home group. And we're sitting at Gopher State, and after the Al-Anon speaker, we hear, Jeff Brook. And we turn around, and here is the lady and her husband from Hawaii back here in Minnesota putting her mother in a nursing home here with the wife of the man we were supposed to be looking up. And I thought, if that's not a God thing, I said, God was doing for us again what we couldn't do for ourselves, because here we are. We meet who's still my sponsor, 24 years later. Met Cindy, and then that night we met Ken, and they've been our sponsors ever since. And I'm just thankful that I've had a consistency. I was talking to Sarah the day at dinner, and I've been very fortunate that I have had a sponsor who's she had what I wanted. She is a woman of grace and a woman of dignity, and she has a wonderful program, and she's just a lady, and I always thought of myself as kind of a bull in a china shop. So I always appreciated her grace and her long nails, and she's very put together, and she's just got a wonderful program and just has gotten a lot of wisdom over the years, and I've just appreciated her so much. But as we're in the program longer, we come back here, we get in the program longer, our son continues to use. And when he was 16 years old, he decided to leave home, and he really has never been back. He left home and got really involved in drugs and alcohol, and it really took him down pretty quick. He checked himself in at 19. He checked himself in for cocaine use, and I think he quit using coke, but he continued to. Alcohol was his drug of choice. Smoked a little pot, I think, here and there, but he continued to drink and continued to drink, and then the same day that it was my Al-Anon birthday, August 26th of 2010, I was at my Al-Anon meeting, thank heavens. Jeff was at his AA meeting. We get a call and Stephen have had a cardiac arrest, and they've rushed him to the hospital. And when a doctor calls you and asks you how far away you are, it's usually not good. And we were about 10 minutes away, and what this program has done for me is that I could stop on the way to the hospital, and we prayed, and I said, you know, God, he was your son before he was ours. And if you decide to take him home tonight, my thank you that he's been in my life. Well, Stephen spent the next 6 days in intensive care, ICU. They had to try to revive him 3 or 4 times before his heart would stop. He was 36 years old. And Drake, the doctor, said to us that night, your son has worked very hard to get himself in this position. And yeah, he has. He's been drinking daily for a lot of years and drugging. So we spent a lot of time in the hospital, and if it wouldn't have been for the program and knowing that I could go right into acceptance here, because there's nothing you can do about it. I don't have any big deal about going into acceptance on the big things. I had cancer 8 years ago. You accept it. It's what it is. You get the diagnosis. You do what you need to do to get through it. This I had no control over. It's those little things like how you wear your hair that I still have trouble with. If you'd have a different opinion than I do, those kind of things. But not the big things. I have no problem accepting and trusting that it's going to be the way it's going to be. And that our son did, like I said, spent, and every doctor that we saw said it's a miracle. It's a miracle he's alive. And I knew that there's a purpose. There's a purpose for him to still be alive. Now, all these years, me being in the program, I have tried to make amends to all my kids, and I've made verbal amends. I've tried to make living amends with all of them. Stephen was always the one that said to me, oh, Mom, you were fine, Mom, He always kind of blew it off as of it was no big deal. And so I had to accept that. He accepted that that was no big deal, I guess. But it was funny, when we were in the hospital and Stephen was in his coma, and they weren't sure if he was going to be brain dead when they brought him out because they didn't know how long he'd been out. And we prayed with them every day, and people from the program came, and people from our church came, and we just spent time, and I talked to Stephen, and if he'd get really agitated, I would just say, your mom and dad are here, Mom's here, Dad's here, and he would calm right down. So even when you're in a coma, they hear things that are being said. And I prayed with him, and I talked to him while he was in the coma, and I wouldn't let anybody say anything negative in the room when he was in the coma. And but when he came out of the, they pulled him out of the coma, and really, he hadn't been out of the coma 15 minutes, and he takes me by the hand, and he goes, Mom, I'm so sorry I've been so rotten to you all these years. And I thought, that's probably the closest to an amends I'm ever going to get. But he is. 3.5, almost 4 years later, he's still alive. He's been on the heart transplant list. I mean, he works with the heart transplant team of people. He's quit drinking. He's not going to AA. He's quit smoking. But what I see that God is doing for me again is he's healing that relationship. If he had died that night, there would have been so much unresolved thing. I would have felt on my part so much unresolved issues, even though I tried to make the amends and tried to do things differently with him. Having him be here this much longer I've been able to have a healing in this relationship, and it's been really good for me, and it's really been good for him. We go out to lunch at least once a month together, just the two of us, and we've really built a relationship, which we'd never had since he left home at 16, and he'll be 40 in June. So I'm really thankful for every day, and that's one of the things I like about this program. You can only live one day at a time, and I'm thankful every day for the day that I have, not just with him, but in life in general. This program has given me back a life. It's given me the opportunity to find out who the woman I'm supposed to be. It has given me a time to be able to change the things I could change, and let God change the things he could change. with me. But I had to be willing, and I had to be open-handed, and I had to be open-minded, and I had to be able to listen to what other people said and take instructions of what people said. And I'm so thankful that I came into this program willing to listen to what you had to say, because you are where the answers are. You're the where I find my hope. You're the ones that have walked that line one step ahead of me. You've been able to do something and then turn around and take me by the hand and walk me through it, and I've so appreciated that. I'm thankful for the group that I go to. My home group is Quiet Moments in Bloomington, Minnesota. If you're ever in town on a Thursday night, we meet at 7:30. There's some really long term recovery in that group. My sponsor is there. She's got 35 years, and there's many people there that have more time than I do, and yet we get a lot of newcomers. And when I was said that it's hard for me to remember sometimes the way I was at a meeting not too many months ago, and a young woman came in, and it really took me right back to the feelings that I could remember back all these years ago. She had come in. She had been with her husband out that morning trying to find a car that he didn't know what he did with. And she was so distraught and so, you know, I could feel that emotion. It brought back that emotion that I felt when I came in, that you feel so hopeless and so things are so out of your control. But what I know about the program of Al-Anon is that if you work the steps, your life changes. Something happens. I don't know how it happens, but I know it happens. I know that if I'm willing to take instructions, if I'm willing to work the steps, I'm willing to live one day at a time, I'm willing to take life that is. I've learned one of the other slogans that's been so meant so much to me over these years is how important is it? You know, before the program, I made everything a mountain. And today I can determine what is really something to be upset about or something to get concerned about or something to that's not. And before the program, I couldn't distinguish those. Everything was just a major deal. I made a major deal out of them. I think because life is continuing to change and we are continually given new situations and new circumstances in which we can grow and become the people we're meant to be, I heard somebody say that we're spiritual beings having a human experience. And I think that's what I want to be. I want my life to be based on spiritual principles. So I've worked very hard to I can see you there. I worked very hard to try to really take the principles that this program offers and really to incorporate them in my life. And when I do that today, I don't have, like I said, I don't have the fear that I had prior to the program. I have fear at times, but it doesn't stay there. I know what to do if I'm feeling angry. I know what to do if a resentment comes up. I know that I can forgive myself. And I used to think I had to trust you. What I learned in this program is I had to trust me. And once I could trust me with my who I was and decisions I were making, then it was easier for me to trust you. And I've made some wonderful friendships through the program. And I've appreciated everyone's input that I've gotten over the years, and I'm thankful that you've allowed me to come and share my story, and